Welcome to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast, where we dive into the journeys of small business owners and entrepreneurs right here in Greater Des Moines. I am your host, Emily McLean. In each conversation, we will uncover the ingredients of business ownership and success to build something extraordinary. Welcome back. Today, we're going to chat a little about a topic that impacts all businesses, especially your small businesses, but business funding. Today, I am joined by Jim Langan with Pivotal Business Partners to provide some expertise on how you can find capital to fund your business. But first, Jim, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your business? I know you've made a business of helping other businesses.
Yeah, that's our, I guess that you could say that's a niche of ours. Pivotal Business Partners, I'll talk about that in a second. My background is in banking. I started in banking when I was 18, and about 5 years ago, I went out on my own and started a company called Langan Solutions, which basically I could tell you is kind of like having an outsourced banker. Most business owners, when they think about anything in finance or anything that has to do with that side of their business, they immediately go to the bank or credit union or wherever they want to go. And that might not be the best thing to do immediately. So Langan Solutions is one of those consulting companies that you can start with, and we can make sure that you're ready to go to the bank, among other things. So I started, like I said, started in the banking business, mostly working with small business owners throughout my career. Started and ran four banks. I'm from Des Moines, lifelong Des Moines resident, mainly in Urbandale and West Des Moines. Went to Dowling Catholic. Caitlin Clark's, you know, every time someone says Dowling Catholic, guess how about Caitlin Clark? So we know her and of her, and it's been fun to watch her. And I know right now we're at this taping, they're playing downtown. And so I'm really excited for the Dowling girls. So I went to the University of Iowa. I have I'm married to a wonderful woman named Tracy, and then I've got two kids. One's in college at Creighton, a boy, and then one is just about to go to Kansas, and she's a Dowling Catholic right now. So I'm going to be an empty nester here pretty soon.
Well, that just means you have more time for the businesses in Des Moines.
That's exactly right. I want to clear that. I want to clear the decks so we can talk to more folks.
So you've created your career helping other businesses find funds for their dreams. How has the business climate changed since you started your career?
Well, I love that question, and it's a good loaded one for me, since I'll show my age a little bit, because I started my banking career in the 80s. And in fact, I was just talking to a client of mine earlier today, and I had to laugh a little bit because I started out as a teller in the banking business in the 80s, and it was in a supermarket, and it was on a Friday, and the bank was located in the back of the supermarket, well, Hy-Vee, and it was right down aisle 2. And at that time on Friday afternoon, there was a line clear down aisle 2. People waiting to bring their checks, deposit their checks, cash them, whatever. You don't see that anymore. So, you know,
definitely not in Hy-Vee.
It's certainly not in Hy-Vee.
Well, not for banking reasons. Right. They may still have a long line.
They might still have a long line, but you know, even then you can have people shop for you and deliver. So, you know, that's just one small example of, you know, the state of banking and finance has changed so much over the years. I feel like I've been fortunate to see it, because not long after that, you know, the internet came around and we knew it was coming. We knew back then I was told you wouldn't have cash anymore. In a few years, it'd be nothing but plastic. And kind of here we are. We still have the cash, but the majority of it is with your card anymore. So that's one of the biggest, you know, when you think about the internet and you think about your phone, that has been just revolutionized banking and finance, and then affecting small business owners. Because, you know, even myself, I own several businesses, and I'm constantly asked, how's your cybersecurity? What are your solutions for protecting my information? There's a lot of security breaches. So you've got this revolutionary great tool. As with anything, though, there's always another side to it that you have to figure out a downside, if you will. And so that's a big change, I would say. And then some of the results of that are just the velocity of business. I mean, things are just so fast right now. I mean, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, everybody right now. Everybody knows that things are just, they go warp speed. And early on in my career, I mean, things had their pace. I remember getting into banking and people go, you've got those banker's hours. I'm like, what are those? You know, back in the day, it was 10 to 3. My job in that supermarket bank was 7 to 7. I didn't know what banker's hours were, but I'm like, well, I want those back. They're gone. I mean, you're pretty much working all the time. If you enjoy what you do, that's great, as do I. I mean, I like what I do, so I feel like I'm always working, but sometimes that pace can really smash you. One of the big things that Langan Solutions does is we do consult and outsource ourselves. As you know, a lot of people say, you're an outsourced CFO. Well, yeah, I suppose. It kind of depends on what you mean by that. We're there to be that business owner's kind of right hand, maybe be there for a lot of the things that the business owner frees them up to go do. You know, if they're really good at selling their widget and that's what makes them money, they figured out that that's what I need to do here. Jim, and your company, you take care of the rest of it. And we're great at doing that. So that right there can kind of tell you that there's just not enough time for a lot of folks, and they're looking for ways to create more time.
Well, you say time, and I think it's interesting to say that because we are here recording on Leap Day. How do we get more of these days in the year to get the jobs we need to do done?
Exactly. This is one of those rare days where did it happen? I don't know. Maybe we lost this day.
I don't know. This podcast is going to get lost in, you know, the outer yeah. spaces.
Yeah. That's so true. We could use an extra Leap Day every month. Although, you know, when you look around, one of the schools around here is going now to a four-day school week. And I know that's been proposed for a lot of businesses. I know Fridays anymore. I know we're here downtown right now in downtown Des Moines. When I used to work down here, I mean, it was coat and tie Monday through Friday. Well, now Fridays were jeans days or, you know, kind of a little casual day. Now it's kind of casual all the time, but Fridays seem to be that day anymore that I don't see a lot of business. It's not as busy as it used to be as far as things happening. People are doing stuff, but I think that's that extra day that just isn't like the others anymore. So I do think that time's, we need to capture more time.
How has funding a business changed in this time since you started to now? Is it easier? Is it more difficult? Or is it a mix in between?
I would say I like that mix, so to speak. I'd love to tell you it's more difficult, but it depends. It depends on your business. It depends on how prepared you are. It depends on your advisors, and probably there's certainly an economic factor there too that either makes it more challenging or not. You know, quite frankly. If you've saved or you have a family funding source of, you come from means, it's going to be easier for you. And not just with your own money, but it's easier to get use other folks' money if you have your own. That's always the deal. So I think it's more just evolved than become more difficult. And then I would also even throw out that maybe there might even be chances where it could be even a little easier. Because the phone has helped. Technology has helped that where you can go out and, hey, I need funds. Well, go out and raise them. You put something out on the internet now. You gotta know what you're doing. But it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you don't need loads of funds, then that might be a good way to do it. Sort of thing.
I do want to touch on that crowdfunding as I think... You know, especially prior to, you know, the burst of the internet, crowdfunding wasn't really an option besides, you know, here's my coffee can. I need some help, you know, building my business. Would you donate to my cause? You know, an investorship is definitely an option. But that crowdfunding, there are a lot of different avenues for crowdfunding now. And there's a ton of different online platforms, some of which you can go on and say, hey, you know, here's what I'm trying to do. And here's the percentage of interest I owe you when I pay this loan, crowdfunding right. loan back. But what is that crowdfunding space like now? And is this a viable option for entrepreneurs and small business owners?
I think it can be an addition. I don't know if I would call it a primary source of funding, depending on what your needs are. I think if they're temporary needs, or if they're, you know, you just need some operating capital for, you know, 3 to 6 months, I think that can be a viable option. I'm going to definitely, Emily, be a little more biased coming from the banking industry.
We won't hold it against
you. Yeah, you know, lawyers, bankers, whatever, throw us out with the bathwater. But
is it because you think it's more risky?
Crowdfunding?
Yeah.
No, just your ability to raise the type of funds that you might need. And then there could be, depending on how you set it up, you know, what's your avenue of payback? What do people want? It goes back to that there really is no such thing as a free lunch. There just isn't. And I'd love it if there was. You know, people, anytime you see the word free, you know, just flocks of people. Then you kind of go, is it really free? Is anything really free? I'd say no. I know you're talking about other funding mechanisms. You talk about sources from your family. That might be the only way you could get around the no free lunch thing. Either you inherit it, or maybe you've got parental funds, or you've got other family members that are willing to either not want their money back for a while or not at all. That's the best thing you can do.
Because when you're doing that crowdfunding and that mm-hmm. crowdsourcing, you almost have to promise, I guarantee you that your money is going to make me successful. And because of that success, I'm going to pay you back
yep.
at this time frame. Which, you know, similar to banks, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes you can get an mm-hmm. extension on that. The terms seem very similar. But you're saying that maybe that's for, like, you know, your $5,000, yep. I need a new machine, and this yep. is going to help. And then you sell your 5,000 donuts, and you can pay back your investors then.
Yeah, and there are other lending sources. Iowa Microloan, for instance, microloans are, depending on, they can also be used in that smaller space. And then, you know, why would you do that? Well, the benefits to that are you've got a mechanism for payback. You know what it is. You've got someone that administers that. In addition, it's you're going through a process to do it. You don't have anybody grabbing at your ownership. You don't have anybody grabbing at you for other things. It's just pick it up, put it down, use it, pay it back. And that's also why it's cheaper. I mean, long run, it's cheaper. Going back a little bit to is it more difficult? That's also the hardest thing to do. You know, when you are financing with a financial institution, you're going to jump through more hoops. You just are. It's the most inexpensive way to do it. So there's a cost benefit to that.
Let's jump into a little bit of your expertise.
Yes.
Many of us, you know, unless you're taking in that inheritance money or family money, don't have the funds to just pop up their great idea into a business. So one of the main pathways that you work with are these SBA loans. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how the SBA has created these loans and how they benefit business owners and just kind of what that avenue looks like? And we have a couple of options like the SBA 504 mm-hmm. and probably the more common, well-known, the SBA 7A.
Yeah, very good. I appreciate that. You're very well-versed in it. A lot of people are not. Most people are not. A lot of people can't tell the difference between a 504 and a 7A, and I'll talk about that in a second. My background, the SBA was pounded into my brain as a young loan officer. My father ran the SBA here in the state of Iowa for the last 15 years of his career after an extensive career in banking. And so every time I'd talk over with him a deal that I was struggling with, he's like, SBA is not what you're using? You know, why are you not doing that? And, of course, my response was, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't understand it. It's very difficult. It's the government. All this stuff that we can talk about. And he's like, Jim, you've got to learn this. it's vital to small business finance. And surprisingly, I find so many folks who think negatively about SBA financing. That's fueled from a lot of different avenues, but I'd say locally, your local financial officer, it depends kind of on their attitude and the attitude of their bank. If they have had some experience in the past that was negative, they're not as likely. And we're, as an organization, trying to get to those folks and show them, you know, why they should work with SBA again. Obviously, it's a government agency, and a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to deal with them. This is one of the agencies that really is set up for you to benefit as a small business owner. It is for your benefit. I was fortunate enough to live through the Great Recession and ran a bank during that time. And I will never forget business owners sitting down at my desk saying, where's my bailout? Where's my money from the government? And my response to them is, it's been there for years. It's called the SBA. That is your deal. That is your government subsidy. Because if you have a business that, in so many cases, maybe you've acquired, that has what we refer to as blue sky, because that's that little area there that is the benefit of the seller in a lot of cases, or even if you're starting a business that just doesn't have a lot of tangible, maybe it's a service business. Most service businesses don't have a lot of tangible assets, and so SBA really takes the place of that, the 7A program I'm speaking of mostly, and it is there to encourage banks and credit unions to make the loan to the small business owner.
Can you talk a little bit about that process? Yeah. You know, when a small business owner hears, okay, I think I need a SBA 7A loan, how does that work? You know, some people, I get calls of, do I need to call the SBA to get this loan? And my answer is, no, you go to your local lender, because the SBA doesn't lend directly.
Right.
They have grant programs, but for the SBA loans, they work with experts like you and other bankers. So how does that loan, that 7A loan, how does that get our businesses that to that next step for living their dreams?
Yeah, so you're exactly right, and I like the way you put that, because there are people who say, and people talk all the time, you know, you listen to everybody, I got to get an SBA loan. And in their minds, they've been told that. And in their minds, the SBA comes and says, here you go. You know, when really it's a bank loan or it's a credit union loan. It's a financial institution that's it's their money. All the government is doing is backing their money. So the SBA really works to back and encourage the financial institution to then make you, the small business owner, the finance. And you're exactly right. It helps to have a good banking relationship. It helps to if you feel like, you know, if you inquire about it and they say, well, we don't do those, you know, that's a bummer, because they're really missing the boat. Because I'm not really sure if your business has some weaknesses to it as far as security, or doesn't have a lot of tangible assets, which a lot of them don't, and the financial institution you're with does not participate or want to participate, it's going to leave you, it's a tool that you're not going to be able to use. The good news is that there's an overwhelming amount that do. We work, my business, HL Lender Resources, assists banks and credit unions. We help them package SBA 7A loans. And I use that word package because it is a process. And it's a little different sometimes than maybe a normal bank or a credit union process would be. But when we come and assist them, it should be quicker, it should be easier. We try and make it that way. We have a lot of experience in this space, and so we're able to consult with those banks and credit unions that have agreements with us. We have agreements with over 40 banks in the state that we can work with, to where we could literally handle it from A to Z if we wanted, if the bank would allow us to. Having said that, it is the bank's decision. We don't make their decisions for them, but we pretty much can do anything else or everything else if they want us to. So you're right, that 7-8, the guarantee program, that's really the way it works. Certainly, we'll talk about this later, but if folks want to learn more about it, we're wide open to talk about it. We're probably one of the better ones to talk about it versus going to your banker. Not saying they're not knowledgeable or they wouldn't, but you'll get kind of an unfiltered, unbiased direction from us, and we're apolitical. We don't have a favorite. We know a lot of folks that might want this deal, might want that deal, might want this deal.
And some banks, you know, they might be what I'm going to call filled up on loans mm-hmm. for coffee shops, mm-hmm. and they might not be as right. open to doing another loan for another coffee shop because they already have a lot of eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
There might be one that, you know, they've done a lot of bike stores recently and they would love to have a coffee shop on their docket, you know, and you yep. probably know that information.
We do. And we would also say, you know, banks are businesses. They are just like a business that I would run. You make business decisions. Do I want to, you know, in my repair shop, do I want to hire that person or this person? Do we want to put a sale on these brake pads or not? You know, you make those kind of decisions, and banks do the same thing with money. You know, maybe we don't want, or we have enough coffee shops, and that's exactly right. Concentrations are huge in financial institutions, and when you have an overwhelming amount, you kind of can't do anymore, and that makes sense. It's not a good business decision. Good thing, like you said, is there's an ability to go to another one that isn't as full.
I think you made a really great point because, and especially in my head, you know, sometimes when I think of banks, I think of, you know, the old 90s cartoons, and the bank is this big white marble building and there's sun coming out behind it, and it is this big independent thing that you go in, you get money, you get what you need and walk out. But like you said, it's a business. They make business decisions. So when you are planning to go for a loan or any reason to the bank, you have to be prepared. As a business owner or as an independent person, if you need a loan for a house, you need to have your everything in check. So what are some of the criteria that a business needs to be eligible for an SBA loan?
Well, very similar to what you would need to be eligible for any other finance. You really do need to prepare your personal financial side. You need to have a personal financial statement. You need to have proof of how you make money. I mean, you're kind of your own business. So if you think about businesses, you know, bring in revenue, you have a set of expenses, and then the net is your what you want to spend. It's your disposable income, whatever. So a lot of times those are your tax returns. You got to get that all in order. And then on the business side, having a good set of financial, not only financials, which I encourage everybody to work with a CPA. I'm a little biased in that area. My brother-in-law is one. He's a very good one. The Vroman Group, they're very good at working with small business owners to produce high-quality financial statements, which then if you take to a financial institution, they don't have to guess at what they're looking at, and they're in according to GAAP. If you got all that, and then projections. Everybody wants to know where you've been, but they really want to know where you're going, because where you're going is going to pay them back. Where you've been is going to tell them, can you pay it? You know, what's your willingness to do it? Do you have a history of doing that? So really that right there are big. And then your business plan overall. I was in a 1 million cups discussion. And I think the folks that asked me to come there for our discussion, and there were a couple of other funders there. I was definitely the fish out of water because I was the creditor in the group, and I remember almost that same question being asked to me, and there were tons of entrepreneurs in the audience, and I could hear the collective groan when I said, "You have to have a business plan." And I think they all thought you had to have a 35-page written document. And I can't say you don't need to do that, but you should be able to articulate on paper what you're going to do. If it's just up here, no one is going to give you any money. You need to be able to do the work. Show your work like you did in math class. You know, everybody hated, oh, I gotta show my work. I can just tell you what the answer is. They don't want to see that. They want to know how you got it. Because that's going to prove to you, you're going to pay me back. It really is an exercise. But I always tell them, put in the work. That's the business plan. Again, it only needs to be a few pages. It only needs to say, this is who I am. This is why I'm doing this. This is what my plan is. And here's my financial projection of how much money I'm going to make and when you're going to get paid back, most importantly, and why. That's usually forgotten. They can't tell you why. Well, my friend Johnny told me this. Now, you got to show me something else. Based on what? The market? Based on, you know, coffee shop? Well, that coffee shop did well over there. I'm doing the same thing, only I've got a better niche, and this is what I'm going to do. That's fine. That's what you're basing it off of. So those are your basics. Obviously, you know, if you have any past credit difficulties, that's a factor you got to consider. I have had, I don't know how many people in my career, well, I have bad credit. And you go, why don't you let me be the judge of that? And a lot of times you'll look at it and go, it's not that bad. You think it's bad because you have a standard that's up here. And then other people won't tell you anything. And you go, hey, what's all this stuff? Oh, well, that's just whatever. So it varies.
Do you have any advice for maybe those people of part of the population who they're coming from a different background? Maybe they're immigrant or refugees. Maybe they just got out of 20 years out of the service and they're used to getting paid by the government, and what do they do now? Or maybe they're re-entering society from a rehab or a jail program, and they've had this really great idea, and they're going to turn their life around. And a lot of this can be a barrier to getting a loan or to getting taken seriously on the business market. Do you have any advice for those people?
Seek out trusted advisors. Seek out folks that can advocate for you. We can be one of those resources. The SBDC is a really good one at that. And then there are groups around that will sit with you and try and break down those barriers and do some education for you. I haven't talked much about Pivotal Business Partners and the 504, and I would like to touch on that a second because I kind of glossed over it. But one of our board members, Monica Reyes, who...
We're planning to have her. She's actually just busy in tax season right now. Monica, we'll see you soon, I promise.
she's amazing. She has a lot of Hispanic origin clients that she assists. And I know I've had, she's actually had me on her radio station before. And I'm sorry, Monica, I don't remember the letters and the numbers, but... she'd be a good resource. So, you know, thinking about folks that have the background, and a lot of times what she'll do is she'll call me and say, hey, does this sound like something's going to work? We love that because we do the same thing. We'll call the bankers or we'll call it. What do you think about this? Does this hold some water for you? Are you interested? And that's just something that advocacy is kind of a big deal, but you need to be able to go to those people and then trust them. I think there's a little bit of a trust factor there too, because if you've had a bad experience, that can make you sheepish. Veterans, you know, SBA has a great veteran program. Veterans, absolutely, I don't think the word gets out enough for our service men and women that, you know, there's a lot of programs that can encourage them to finance their business or get into business ownership. And then I think that they've got a lot of opportunity. In fact, I would almost call them an advantage. And they should have it. I like it. So, you know, SBA is really big on that. And we can again, I keep talking about us, but at least if you start with us, we can at least, for nothing else, be a conduit to somebody else. I would think the partnership's a good one, you know, for people to, for you to advocate for them. And you might say, well, let's bring in Langan Solutions to help you with that. And if you got a question or whatever. I was with the city of Des Moines the other day, too. We sat down with them and talked to them about our programs, and they want to. They're trying to find ways to serve folks that might not be attached or might not know what to do. And so we're just encouraging them, you know, let us help. I mean, talk's inexpensive. There's no commitment to talking.
So. You say on a podcast.
Mm-hmm,
that's recorded.
I did.
But no, you're totally right. Those discussions and just the community building that happens there and being able to identify, because you might know something that I don't know,
right.
Being able to lift up those communities and help just direct and be a resource partner is, I think, one of the most unique things that we have here in Greater Des Moines. We have so many people who are willing to do that. And people, I just don't think they realize all of the fillers that we have in the community that can help fill in those cracks that you don't know.
Mm-hmm. I should have mentioned Evelyn Davis Center, too.
Oh, yes. Fantastic resource.
I know Jane Armstrong, who runs the SBA here, she puts in a lot of time over there. Mm-hmm. So there are... I know they're there, and we just have to get folks
to
LinkedIn.
Them.
LinkedIn. If you don't mind, I might talk about the 504.
Yeah, let's jump back to that 504. Because I know a lot about SBA 7A, enough
Good.
To be dangerous.
You do. You know a lot.
But I'm not familiar with the 504. So what does that look like?
Yeah, so when I started Langan Solutions, it was in conjunction with the 504 program itself, because over my banking career, I made a lot of these deals because I love the 504 program. I just love it. And it's a program that is, I would call it the best kept secret in finance. I really do. It's the commercial real estate arm of the SBA. And it is for, the SBA finances business operators. They don't finance investors. You know, I've got businesses I invest in. Well, I'm not going to get an SBA loan for that. You know, I mean, we're talking about owner-operators. And so they'll finance land, building, and equipment for owner-occupied assets. They have to occupy the asset up to 51%. So the 504, the win-win of it all, is that the SBA, it's a 50-40-10 style of finance. So you have to have a bank partner or a financial institution. So there's the financial institution, there's us, and we're called a certified development company, or a CDC. Back when the program started, the SBA said, okay, we're gonna do this program. Their main aim was to create jobs out of this program. It is a jobs-producing, creating program. That we're going to have these CDCs, certified development companies,
but
all
not
over
the
country.
Scary CDC.
Not that one. Not the disease
okay.
one. This is the certified development companies. And Pivotal Business Partners is one. It used to be called the Corporation for Economic Development, and the city of Des Moines ran it. And the gentleman who ran it, he retired, almost called him a young man, Terry Vorbrick, I called you young. Anyway, great guy. He retired, and I was able to come in and my company take over the operations of it. And so what we did is we took it and we rebranded it, because the city, it isn't associated with the city of Des Moines anymore. It does have a board. We are a nonprofit. And so we make, when we get to a point where we have enough reserves, our challenge is to reinvest in the community. So I love that part of it. We're not there yet, because we're kind of still in a building mode. When I took it over, it was kind of like a new business. But going back to this, so you got the 50-40-10. The bank will finance the first 50% of a loan, so or of a project. So you think the project's $1 million, they're going to be $500,000. We're going to come in for the next up to 40%, which is $400,000, and then the borrower puts in 10%. So if you think about a 10% down payment, that is as low as you're going to find. To when you buy real estate.
It's a pretty good down payment. That's like a really nice lower number.
Yeah, it's a great number for commercial, in the commercial finance space. So the borrower is already benefiting by, it's, you don't have to spend all your money on your space. You know, you spend some of it. The rest of your funds that you have, you for operating, and that's where we want it.
So this is really great for expanding businesses.
It is. It is. Expanding business, even new businesses, but expanding businesses as well. So you've got the 50-40-10 stack, and then that 40% that we finance, we can put it on as long as a 25-year term with a fixed rate for all 25 years. So you mentioned earlier about no direct loans from SBA to the borrower. This is the only one. It does actually come from the SBA through us.
Through the non-scary CDC.
Through the non-threatening CDC. We are definitely non-threatening. And so it's a 25-year loan. You don't find that. I haven't found that anywhere in the world. You can get 25 years in commercial with a fixed rate. And the fixed rate is always below the market. So right now, a 25-year fixed rate loan, if it was funded today, is 6.3%. Most rates right now in banks for commercial real estate are 7.75 to 8. So it's a great situation for the borrower. It's great for the financial institution because the first 50%, they're in a first mortgage position. We're in second. So they're financing 50 cents on the dollar. And again, I'll invoke the Great Recession. Back then, that's what real estate was going for, 50 cents on the dollar. So it's non-scary for the financial institution for sure. So I loved it. So I took it over, and we've been able to make some great, work on some great projects from veterinary practice to a manufacturer not far from Des Moines here. We can go statewide. We financed a doggy daycare, you name it, we can get into an environmental company. We've got a lot of great borrowers. The cool thing is we don't have a concentration either, so it doesn't matter what the product type is, as long as it's eligible, it works. And you have, it's a little narrow. There's some eligibility requirements, but I'll tell you right now, if you're a female business owner, you check the eligibility box right away. If you're a minority business owner, if you're a veteran, you don't have to. All the eligibility requirements are checked just by that.
So I guess my biggest question is, can you stack the 7(a) program and the 504 program? Let's say I got a loan with the 7(a) program and I'm a year and a half in, and oh my gosh, I need to expand. Yeah. I've heard this awesome 504 program. Mm-hmm. Do they stack, or do you have to complete one before you can do the other?
Generally, that's an awesome question. If you already have a 7A, you can do the 504 whenever you want. But if you're doing them together, the 7A comes first. And they are done together. And here's why it comes first. Because the 504 program cannot be used for business acquisition. So it's very narrow. Land, building, equipment. That's it. Can't use it for anything else. So if you kind of get that 504 cart out of the horse here a little bit, it can be misconstrued as business acquisition by SBA. That's also why, another plug for us, you should work with us on it, because we know how to do this. And the cool thing is we have Pivotal Business Partners and we have HL Lender Resources, which is in both programs. And I think we're one of the few, if not only, that can do that. So, yes, I'll answer your question that way. We have a lot of projects that are just like that. Highland Park Bakery.
We love them.
We just, that had a 7A and a 504. And I can say that. This is public. All SBA loans are public. So it's not a secret. So giving a plug out to those guys, that's an awesome place. So please, everybody go.
So you can use that 504 to make sure that, let's say we have a lot of historic buildings here, yeah, in Des Moines. And when folks are looking at those properties, a lot of them don't have like grease traps or the ventilation, or the 504 covers a lot of that, yep, building and renovation.
Absolutely. Yeah, and historic properties. The only thing, depending on the economic useful life of the project, you find that in the appraisal. If say that comes in at 22 years, you might not be able to do the 25 year, but we can do our 20 year. So it's totally eligible, but sometimes historic properties get in a little bit of a murky gray area there. But I'm going to tell you something, Emily. If we can make the program fit, we'll do it, because it's the best thing going. There just isn't a downside for anybody. And the greatest thing for banks and credit unions, if you're listening, liquidity is a hard thing to find right now for financial institutions. So I probably go a little bit back to one of your questions about difficulty. because banks are businesses, they have certain things that they need to have in place in order to do what they want to do. And when I say the word liquidity, a lot of people, they need to take in funding sources of their own. That's usually our deposits. That's usually the money that comes in that they don't pay us for. You know, we're not, it's not, we're not given an interest income for that. We're given a checkbook or, you know, a place to put our money, safe place to put our money. And so they then take that out and they lend it at a much higher interest rate, and that's how they make money. It's not a hard concept. It's very difficult to put in practice. And the 504 program allows you to finance 50% of the project. Now you can take the other 30% that you might have used and lend it to somebody else.
There's still quite a few funding resources for your business that I want to hit before we lose you today. So we'll do a couple rapid fire. Entrepreneurs, they seek out venture capital. They seek out investors. If you're not familiar with what venture capital is, that's okay. What is something folks should know about venture capital? How do they know venture capital is right for them? And how do they go about approaching investors or potential investors?
Yeah, I mean, it's another funding source. And it is kind of wide open. There's not the book of venture capital that you go to and go, okay, this is what you do.
It's a little bit of a bear hunt.
It can be. And that's, again, you kind of have to do your homework with your advisors. And the great thing about Iowa and the city of Des Moines is that it's a big, small town, so generally you should be able to be linked up. I would go to the partnership, see who you know. I could come to us, see who we know that we've had experience with, too. And that, again, they're just like banks. They can be up and down with what they want to do. But, you know, the one thing with them is it's going to be it's a difficult road in a lot of cases. It takes a lot of time. Lots of due diligence required. You may get worn out. You think SBA can wear you out sometimes. This is a lot longer process in many cases because it's more like they really examine what you're going to do. They want to make sure that this is going to work. And, they're going to want...
Because it's a personal risk.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be. And they're going to want you to succeed quickly, and that might not be your thing. Again, I'm not. This isn't a Debbie Downer thing. It's an option, and there I go with my talk as inexpensive.
Well, especially for small business owners, they mm-hmm. grow gradually over the lifetime of their business.
Yeah,
and the difference with entrepreneurs is they have this great idea and they're going to go for it hard and they're going to go for it fast. And they're either going to keep it and grow it till it
yep.
reaches the moon, or they're going to build it to the price that and the point where they can sell it and then move on to the next thing. And so that's why the venture capital is a little better for the entrepreneurs, because they're moving rapid. They're moving right. at a pace that is different than, I would say, a standard business owner.
Yeah, and you as the entrepreneur need to decide. You'll have a lot of decisions to make with VC because I think if you have a tried and true going concern, or you have an end game like you just said, which I think is cool, that might be a really good option for you because you don't really care if your stake is reduced. Depends on what your income is. Then you can take and go do something else. If that's generally what they want to do, buy and sell, buy, grow, buy, sell. You know, the small business owner, it's probably a little more difficult because you don't want anybody in your business. You know, you don't want anybody looking over your shoulder. I mean, a lot of small business owners like me, you know, I was used to being beholden to a board and investors and sometimes a CEO, and sometimes you just don't want that. You know, you want the only person you want to, in my case, want to be beholden to is my wife. You know, she tells me what to do. And then
he says that with love, Tracy.
I do. I really do. Love you.
Next one, grants. We do have quite a few good grants here in the community. There are some national grants, but the Iowa Center, IEDA, other programs, and grants are a great way to keep somebody else out of your business. But as a small business owner, you might not be an expert grant writer.
Right. And there's a lot of resources for that, that again, you can ask. I think, IDED's a great one. They're good folks over there to ask them, who do you know for this? What would be a good, especially women and minorities? The targeted small business program is phenomenal.
Kimberly does a great job.
I recommend them all the time for that segment. You got to be that in that segment, but why not? I think that they can help really catapult you to then maybe other funding sources as your business grows. So, and then, like I said, grants, there's a lot of money around. You just got to get to it. And
it might not be one grant that solves all your problems. You're likely going to have to layer grants and continue to kind of keep plugging at it. But instead of going to the bank to be like, hey, I need money again, you're saying, hey, I'm a really good option for if you're looking to give this out, I'd use it well.
One thing we haven't talked about, Emily, is running a small business or being a business owner is not easy.
Oh, gosh, no.
And I would tell you that it isn't for the faint of heart. But it's so rewarding that it's worth the work. And I think, as my good friend Ben Hildebrandt counseled me when my son was going to college, we were looking for scholarships. He's like, it's a full-time job to find scholarship money. It can be a full-time job finding grant money or other sources. But you have to have people like Ben around to help and can direct you. But then you got to do the work. My daughter's, like I told you, she's going to KU, and she's filled out numerous scholarship applications. I mean, they're very similar, and, they want to know what you know and why and what you're going to do with it. They want you to give us a story. Show me your passion. Why are you going to be really good at this? Why should we give you that and not Emily? So I think it's worth the work.
What is the best piece of advice that you've received as a business owner that you would give to another business owner?
Love what you do. I mean, you want to have a love affair with what you're doing. I think bridging on that, I would also say you really have got to like people. I think anybody can argue me out of this statement that it doesn't matter what the widget is, it involves people. And it involves, if it's a for-profit business, it involves making money. And so you have to like it because you're going to live it. And I know I do that. In fact, I told a new acquaintance of mine this morning, I said, I feel like I don't work hard, I work smart. But that's because I've chosen to do that, and I can do that. It doesn't involve this grind it out, work 24/7, but you've got to be smart about it. And if you love it, generally I think you'll be smart about it. Like, this is a blast. I appreciate having this ability to talk about it because it really makes me smile every time I talk about small business owners and what they do. Because it's again, not for the faint of heart, but I would just encourage folks, immerse in it. It's not a part-time job.
Not a part-time job. Well, Jim, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for coming in.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Emily.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast, produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. I am Emily McLean, and I hope that you took away a couple of notes for your small business here in Greater Des Moines. Until next time.